All right, welcome to another Data Hurdles. I'm Chris Detzel, and
I'm Michael Burke. How you doing, Chris?
Good, man. I'm Dallas, Texas, of course, and it's nice and warm. I think we'll hit 60 today, and then tomorrow and the next day and the next, we'll hit 70 or 80. So, yeah, it's good. How about you?
I don't know if I've told you that. I know I've told you this before, but the audience, I'm building a pantry in my basement, I just finished the floor, so we're about to get all of these, like, cupboards in and cabinets, and so going through that this weekend, hopefully everything will turn out nice, but it's been a fun home improvement project.
I feel like you've been doing that for a long time now, but
way longer than I wanted to, and it's become way bigger a project, from like electrical to all these other things, and it's now like over 350 square feet, so it's actually like a sizable room that we've built out.
Wow.
So,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been fun though. It's been a lot of fun. So today we have a special guest, Jeremy Merle. He is the founder of Craft. Thanks for coming on, Jeremy. Really appreciate that you took the time out of your day to join us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So, Jeremy, just to get started, can you give us just a brief introduction of yourself and really, like, how did Craft come to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the founder and one of the partners at Craft. Is a digital product design studio. And my background is in design and user experience. I've been designing digital products for over 20 years. And I started my career in Philadelphia, where I joined a research and design consulting firm working for large Fortune 500 companies. So we worked with Microsoft and Merck and the New York Stock Exchange and a number of companies in the financial services and healthcare sectors, among others, and built up a great experience there, and then really wanted to get into the startup scene. So I moved up to Boston and I joined a startup at the very early stages, pre-product, that was run by an incredible entrepreneur, Jeremy Allaire, and the company was Brightco. And Brightco is an online video platform, and I really didn't know anything about the space, but I was really interested in getting involved in the startup scene and creating a product from the ground up. And so I was very fortunate to join that incredibly talented team, pre-product and pre-revenue. I was brought in as the founding designer and ran both product design and also brand design while I was there. And it was an incredible experience to me. I got to see the entire trajectory of a very early stage startup kind of defining and trying to find product market fit all the way through scaling up a company and launching multiple products. Some of the products were very successful. Other products we had very high hopes for and we had to shut down. And so it was a really incredible learning experience. And through that process, it was over 8 years, we ended up going public as a company, which again was another incredible experience to participate in, and really got a great background and knowledge for building products in the early stages and then how those products scale and an understanding of building teams and how to run teams from that perspective. And so shortly after the company went public, I left and with one of the people who were running sales and also one of the founding engineers, created a company in a completely different direction. So this was my first co-founding experience. The company was called FanCredit. It was a sports social media platform. And we created an incredible community. It was really a wonderful experience to, again, expand my knowledge as a designer, but also as a founder, and to build upon that. And we created a fantastic community within the sports media space. Unfortunately, we weren't able to scale it. And so we ended up selling the platform. But at the time, I had been doing some advising and meeting with a number of different folks within the startup scene within Boston and other areas, and found that a lot of startups, especially early stage, were struggling with design and user experience. And they had fantastic engineering teams, but they couldn't really figure out how to leverage design as a unique differentiator. And that's really how Craft was born. Craft started a little over 8 years ago, working with early stage startups and partnering with them very holistically to help them integrate the background that I built up in terms of design and user experience. And today we have scaled the company up. We're about 40 people now across the country. And we work with a range of companies from seed stage companies all the way through Fortune 500 companies.
Really interesting. And let's just jump right into this. I think that I would love to learn a little bit more about Craft's mission and vision. And you and I have worked a little bit to give everyone else a little bit of context, drafting up some AI documents, talking about AI a lot, as especially it's gained traction in the market and popularity. what is Craft's real mission and vision with respect to AI? And how do you think this differentiates your agency, especially as a design agency, compared to many of the other folks out there today in the Boston area?
Yeah, great question. So our mission at Craft is very simple. We're focused on creating exceptional experiences across the board for all of the companies we work with. As we think about the opportunity with AI, it's dramatically affecting the opportunities for our business and for our clients. And so we're investing very heavily in AI and educating our team and training our team, also working with companies and helping them develop their AI strategies. So we've done a few things as it relates to the way we're thinking about AI and how that relates to data and the companies we're working with. So we've developed an internal team that's focused on AI at Craft, and that team has developed a set of user experience principles based on the work that we're doing with several companies that have AI-focused products. Also, the research that we're doing. So we're looking externally at understanding how people are leveraging AI today, the opportunities in the future, what's possible today. A lot of the companies we're working with, and we can get into this, there's a lot of optimism around where we could go and the possibilities around AI agents and other types of experiences. But the technology is sometimes not there yet, especially as we think about working with early stage startups. And so we're trying to develop a very strong perspective there. So we have this group that's focused on these principles. We're bringing speakers in as well to help educate our team to create a diverse set of perspectives in terms of what companies are doing, not only the companies that we're working with, but other companies. We also are doing some future visioning just around expanding upon removing constraints, right? Conceptually, what does the world look like in a year, 5 years, even 10 years, as we think about the opportunity that really gives us space to even go beyond the work we're doing that's feasible today with the technology, because things are moving so fast, and to create opportunities in terms of what we believe future vision might look like. And we have a number of other kind of products that we'll be launching and work in that space.
So I'm a startup. I run a bunch of startups, right? You know, BBS, we build 12 startups a year. When we think about UI and design, like, we are moving so fast. There is so little time for us to put in necessarily the amount of forethought, which I'm sure an agency like yours has done, on taking these projects and elevating them to the next level. Especially in the AI space, what would be the first steps engaging with a product like mine? Say we had just done our bootstrap UI, we had a really good concept, we're still figuring out product market fit. How do you engage with someone like us? I'm sure that a lot of your customers in that startup space have a similar vibe and kind of mentality as they are seeking out an agency like yours. How do you elevate them to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is to develop a shared understanding of what we're trying to achieve together. What are your goals as a business? What are your users' goals? Who are your users? I think is also something that's really critical. So we need to develop a shared understanding of what the goals are, who you're creating these products for, what their real pain point is. A lot of companies come to us and they have a hypothesis around a few different types of users. So one of the opportunities is to really be very clear and define who we're designing the products for. And then we like to work in two streams of work. One is a future vision stream. So we'd like to think about, again, if your goals are trying to think about opportunities for the future, can we quickly develop a perspective around and strategy where we might go and what your North Star might be so that we have a line of sight to that? And then also work in terms of what the realities are today and developing a product. And we think about bringing a product to market quickly. Speed and quality are really important. So when we think about MVP, our goal is not just get a product out as fast as you can. We think that's the wrong approach. It is get a product out that really meets the needs of the users are designing for as quickly and efficiently as you can, but it really solves a core problem. And we try to narrow that down to the solid number of kind of users that we can focus on to solve their problem and to have the product be a very high quality product that we're delivering and then iterate really quickly in market. So Craft is made up of user research, design, and also engagement, which is essentially a combination of product strategy and project management. And our goal is constant iteration through prototyping and testing with end users. So if we were working together, I think we would want to get to that shared understanding really quickly and then start developing concepts as fast as we can in a lightweight way that we can start taking out and evaluating and getting feedback. And that signal continues to come in to help us navigate our way towards early product market fit.
You know, I kind of feel like that there, since AI and all those things are really new, so for the ChatGPTs, when you look at a product company like ours, you have documentation, we have an online community, we have support, all those kinds of things. At some point, the AI kind of large language model is going to take over some of that. You'll feed that the information around the product and it's going to help answer all those. But when I think about design, I think that there's an opportunity for a company just to take hold of that and to be like,
yeah, totally. Oh,
we can win at this. And this is the way it's going to be. And then over time, that's just the way it's going to be, is that's how it's going to look like. But somebody's going to be able to win at that piece. And that's pretty exciting to think about. That's just one piece of AI, right? But that's how I think of it.
Denzel, to your point too, I feel like today we're in this infancy. It bumps like when we had the DOS days. Here's right. The infographics, right? You had this green screen that you're typing stuff into. The way that we've reverted back with language models to a chat box is so fun to me, right? We're going to see so many other ways that feel free to jump in if you agree or disagree. I'd love to discuss this, but it just seems like such a rudimentary way that takes a lot of time to get to an outcome.
Yeah, 100%. We believe the same exact thing. Like, the future is not just an open text box with a blinking cursor. There's so much more opportunity here.
Exactly.
We think a lot about, I think there are a couple of themes that are really exciting right now, among others. One is collaboration. So today, yes, there's this great opportunity for me to describe the outcome I want, and then magically that appears. And that's fantastic in a number of the early products. But like you said, we are so early today. We think a lot about collaboration. There's a much bigger opportunity for us to collaborate and AI to collaborate more holistically with us. We started to think about ways that we can more proactively allow AI to help you get your thought process to the place where you can even get the right out. Collaboration's a big theme. I think proactiveness is a big theme. I think there's opportunities for AI to be much more proactive on your behalf and to deliver ideas, concepts, outcomes, suggestions to you, as opposed to you always having to direct it. I think specifically as it relates to data and analytics, for example, when we think about, we work on a lot of complex data analytics types of platforms. And a lot of the platforms today, they just show you a bunch of charts and graphs and you have to make sense of everything. And so with AI, you can start delivering answers to people, which is what they're really trying to get to. They're really trying to understand a problem through data, but they're really trying to get answers and then take action on those answers. So if we're able through AI to be more proactive about the types of things that you're trying to achieve, give you those answers, but not only give you the answers, give you opportunities for what to do with those answers. There's so much potential there that I think we're exploring in terms of how products can take advantage, be more collaborative, be more proactive, and that's pretty exciting to us.
Go back to the mindset of a start too, especially at this book, make so many assumptions on who your personas are. Half the times you know it, you're just guessing. And that whole process of developing a product, it comes around that process of learning about who your persona is until you become an established company, right? And guessing and checking in a lot of ways quickly your assumptions in alignment with the reality of your, and as your market, some things change, persona changes too. How much more complexity is added when you layer on AI into this? I feel like current mouse, you did designing by elements and some interactivity, but now we have this intelligence piece that we're trying to fit in there. And a lot of startups are adding bullet products around AI from the ground up. How do you even think about the persona when you're adding in large language models and other complex pieces from day one?
Yeah, so a couple thoughts there. One, the opportunity in products that are leveraging AI are so new today. We don't have enough experience to be able to really go out and evaluate feedback from people. If I were to ask you these questions, feedback I'm going to get is going to be limited. So we have to really show you and give you products to experience, and then understand how you're experiencing them and interpret that and allow those insights to drive where we're going. And that's really with all new technology, right? You think about new tech, we have to develop strong hypotheses, and we have to go out and we have to evaluate them. We can't ask people what they want because they don't know. They haven't used this stuff before. And so we have to create it and evaluate it and really understand the opportunities from that perspective. I think the other piece as it relates to AI and exploring at an early stage and developing personas is that you have to be comfortable being wrong sometimes about some of the stuff and taking some chances. We encourage a culture of experimentation, but at the same time, you have to balance that because, especially in an early stage startup, you have to meet people where they are. What I mean by that is people are used to using existing products and they're comfortable using them. They understand and have a mental model of how to use existing technology. So what we think about is there's all this great opportunity, but you have to allow people some time to get there. So what could we do to people where they are today? Give them experiences that they feel comfortable with. Truthfully, the chat experience is something people are comfortable with, so it's an easier thing to pick up. But understanding how to write good prompts and what you can do, that's totally new. And so people don't understand how to do that yet. Some do. But in terms of early users who might not be as sophisticated with some of these types of technology, you have to meet them where they are.
Just takes time, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I wonder, if you were to guess, how do you see us interacting with AI in the future, right? What are some of the mediums? Is it audio? Is it going to be like your Apple Vision Pro? What are the ways that could really take off in the next, let's say, 5 years, right?
Yeah, I think the opportunity for automation feels like there's huge potential there. And that's across the board in terms of taking tasks off your plate, enabling you to not do a lot of the things that you're doing that are kind of time suck, but allow you to focus on creating true value, thinking about problems more strategically. I'll relate it back to design. I think it is one area that we tend to think about. A lot of the tactical design, pushing pixels and creating initial concepts and developing stylistic ideas and color palettes and things like that, I think are already starting to be automated and will get increasingly better. And as we think about the opportunity for designers, I think a lot of that tactical work can be done by AI. And what does that world look like when, you know, that's taken off your plate? Now I can think much more strategically and conceptually, and I can develop different ideas and test those ideas much more rapidly. So the idea of being able to rapidly create prototypes and then get those tested and evaluated, leveraging AI to speed up my process, I think has immense value. I also think just generally, like you mentioned, there's all these different opportunity from audio to video creation and generation. And I see huge potential there for AI.
Mike and Jeremy, I think that I was thinking about this the other day is when you get in the car and you can say, Siri, play me a Spotify on this particular type of music, and it will. But that's really all I could do. It can't do a lot of different things. And I think that AI is going to do all the things that you just mentioned. It's going to open up lots of possibilities, already is, and things like that. But it will also enhance the existing capabilities within, whether it's Siri or any other talking phone that you could talk to. It's going to be able to do a lot more, I assume, with that. Just right now, whenever I ask it to go to this playlist and do this thing, sorry, I can't help you or whatever right now. But now you can ask it more better. I think ask it more questions. It's going to be able to do more. It's going to do all these things without... I just think there's going to be huge upgrades in those areas, in some areas. So to me, it's enhancing to what's already existing. So what does that look like in the future? Just better, and not just answers, but they can actually go do things for you more often. You know what I mean?
I think you made a great point.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
No, I was going to say, I think you're making a great point. I think there's a lot of ideas around what AI can do today. Can AI order me groceries and get everything delivered and make modifications? That doesn't seem like the... Seems like it should be possible, but it's not happening just yet, but it will very soon. And I think those types of things, like you said, they will just become much more efficient and they'll actually get paid off compared to where things are today.
When Mike mentioned... Go ahead, Mike. Sorry, you got me all excited.
These models, right, today, and you brought up a good point, they don't know you.
Yeah.
I think this is the biggest piece that we're going to see shift over the next couple of years is you have to instruct them on everything you want them to do. And in the future, you are going to have a model that not only understands you, but is decentralized from the internet, right? It's going to be like your model that you take with you on your phone, on your computer, and it's going to have access to everything about you, your emails.
Scary, man. Like, this model that follows you around, dude. Like,
it will. But it won't be like sending data to a big corporation. It'll live on your device.
Yeah.
And it will know, hey, you got an email from your boss asking for this data. Here's a chart to represent it. If you let me know if you want me to pull this in and send an email back. Like, that's going to, I really do believe that you're going to see that kind of transparency and communication between how machines and people work together. And not going to replace a person because you're still going to need judgment, which I don't think we'll get to for a long time. But you will get an assistant that can do 80% of the mundane things that you do in your day-to-day life rapidly and instantly.
And just think about creating the design for that.
Yeah.
Bring that around to Jeremy, right? Like, seriously, like, you've got to have an amazing kind of experience with that kind of stuff and what that looks like in different areas. If you can carry it with your phone or if you can carry it on your computer or whatever. It's going to be those different types of experiences with this model that is following you around or whatever.
Like, that's what we get really excited about. And I think, like you said, there's so much opportunity. As you think about the personalization and the AI knows me, they know my personality, they understand the way that I write, the way that I communicate, the people I communicate with and how I communicate. That's incredibly powerful, but it's also incredibly complex to think about the experience of that. So if my assistant is constantly doing things on my behalf and really understands me. For example, how do you think about security around that? Mike, if my assistant is going to reach out to you about a meeting, how do I know, how do we create an experience where I'm comfortable with my assistant reaching out and scheduling a meeting on my behalf with you at a certain time, but there's someone else that I need to have this time blocked off. So how do you create an experience around that? It is very complex, but it presents such an opportunity. I think that's what we're excited about at Kraft is really shaping these experiences.
Huge opportunity for you. Huge opportunity. And that's pretty cool.
And that's just one challenge, right? Out of all of this.
Talk about one job that could go away, EA, huh? At some point.
So I don't think any of these, we oversimplify the tasks of these complicated jobs. And we haven't even gotten into things like the sentiment of an instruction or an ask or the prioritization of things. There's so many pieces that you would need so many more inputs to be able to collect information, to even understand, and a knowledge base to be able to understand how to take action on something. That's where I think that point of judgment, we're still so far from. The next, at least in my opinion, the next phase is going to be something where every instruction or like proactive prompt, you have to verify. It'll be like, do you want me to do this? Here's an email. Read it. Yes, I'd like you to do that. Do you want me to order groceries? Yes, here's the list. Order groceries.
So you're bringing up actually some great points that tie directly back into the principles we've developed. And I think as you think about that constant kind of questioning back and forth, at what point does that actually feel like a good experience or feel like a nuisance to you? You know, with some of the products that exist today, I think some of the user experience challenges that are actually takes me more work to, get the output that I want than if I were to just go to do it, write it myself, do it myself, design it myself. And so I think that will shift over time. But again, I don't know if I want to, do I have to be asked about everything to confirm it? But on the flip side, transparency is really critical and enabling users to be in control. That is one of our core principles. People should be in control. And so how do you make sure you have those checks and balances and you're in charge and understand what's happening on your behalf if it's being automated, I think is a really good opportunity.
So how does Kraft, with all this new movement, I know you talked a little bit about this at the beginning, but what is your strategy to stay ahead of a lot of these industry trends and really ensure that this direction aligns with the company's values and ethical standards, right? There's a lot of new gray areas that we're exploring.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it all, again, it comes back to having that shared set of goals and understanding in terms of what's important. If this is for client work, this is a business that we're working with, as a partner on their behalf. So what are their standards? What's important to them? What are the things that we're looking to drive for their business? And then once we have that shared understanding, the way we think about staying ahead is, again, simultaneously having a specific vision track where we're able to think 1, 5, 10 years ahead and develop strategies in terms of where the business is going to be in the future. How do they compete? What's it? How do they stay ahead? Especially, we think about a lot of the large companies that we work with. There are a lot of startups that are attacking them in different ways and different pieces of their business. And a lot of these companies, they grow through acquisition, for example. They have a bunch of different products. They're trying to just catch up. And we believe there's that meet them where they are and create great product experiences based on what people need today and competing in the current market, thinking a bit into the future, and then having a simultaneous track around the vision. And again, removing some of the constraints, thinking more broadly, and then being able to push things and think further out. Removing some of the technical challenges as well. I think a lot of companies fall into this trap of they're constantly working against what's technically possible today, and they get caught up not allowing themselves to break out of that, removing those technical constraints, thinking about the possibilities, developing those North Star ideas, because they really enable you to start to move in a direction and expand your thinking. And some of the ways that we do that are through time box design sprints. So really constraining the amount of time that we're going to look at a problem, go really broad, but remove constraints that are technical, that thinking about market expansion, and really leaning into the possibilities of what could be, and then challenging all of our assumptions. We develop strong opinions and we try to break them down. We try to argue against them, but always asking questions and trying to continue to evolve our thinking. And then the other thing that I think is really important as we work with clients and as we think about our business at Kraft and just evolving our thinking in general is expanding our network, talking to you guys, talking to other people building products, engaging with smart people, and just having these types of dialogues and conversations, I think has been fantastic to expand our thinking. And we bring these ideas and concepts back internally at Kraft and we share them and we discuss them, and it's all pretty exciting.
Something I've seen in the past is, we've all seen it, is back in the day when Amazon was winning at online stuff, and they're still winning, but you had all these kind of brick and mortar type stores like Walmart, for example. They were losing the online battle big time, right? It's just the everything that you get online quickly, all this stuff. And what do? They buy these really cool looking companies that had some really great designs, and they bought them, spent billions of dollars, and then integrated it into their own online store. And so I think in the future, you're going to have all these really cool startups, have these really cool designs and fancy kind of stuff, because it's harder for a bigger company to integrate the, or to just build something from scratch like that, because they don't have those folks that are thinking that way. And I think you'll see lots of acquisitions in the future, 2 to 3 years from now, when all these really cool startups happen. All of a sudden, oh, that's cool as hell. I'm putting that in because that's doing all. I think that's easily going to happen, right? I think you have a really awesome opportunity here to really create some really cool things, especially around the AI kind of stuff. But then bigger companies are going to buy in, and then it becomes everyday things. That's what's going to happen. I guarantee it. I think. I don't know. Anyways.
Well, it's going to be embedded into everything.
Yeah. And
I gave a presentation earlier on this where I said, look, like, it's in the travel space. If you're not thinking about this now, you should be very concerned, because all of these other platforms and startups coming out are going to be built on an AI first platform, which means that your ability to pivot and transform is going to become exponentially harder as a business that has a whole ecosystem not designed around that. To me, the younger players have this huge advantage right now, where the faster they can develop and grow, the better. And this is like one of these technological shifts where, you know, yes, bigger companies will catch up, but it's going to take time and it's going to be a lot harder for them to move fast.
I was at the same conversation with one of our clients today, same exact conversation, where every new company, like you said, is being built and considering AI from the ground up, and they're moving so fast. And how do these larger companies think about catching up when they have such large legacy products, right? And I think that there's a shift happening in terms of the investment that needs to be made now, even though it's still early, before a lot of these companies
continue to eat away at market share just because they can move so fast. And to your point, they're focused on smaller areas so they can develop product in a way that targets a specific piece of someone's business.
Yes.
And like you said, there likely will be a lot of acquisitions in that space.
No doubt.
Jeremy, this was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for jumping on the show today. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to rate and review us. I'm Michael Burke.
And I'm Chris Detzel.
Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate it, Jeremy.
Yeah,
thanks so much, guys. This was great.